market rate, £3,000 a day. Were you signing Lionel Messi?
This is First Minister's Questions. Just once, it would be nice to get a First Minister's answer.
For Douglas Ross to stand there and talk about losing grip of a party when he has been leader, the Conservatives have had the longest attempted coup in Scottish political history.
The Steenie, a politics podcast from The Scotsman. Hello and welcome to The Steamy, The Scotsman's politics podcast. Holyrood is back. MSPs have returned to the Scottish Parliament after the two-week Easter break, and there was no easing back into it. We've launched straight into an almighty political row over Scotland's climate targets. The Scottish Government has confirmed that its target of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 75% by 2030 has been ditched. The annual climate targets, which have been missed for 8 out of 12 years, have also got the boot to be replaced by a five-yearly carbon budget target approach. But Humza Yousaf and his Net Zero Secretary, Mary McCallum, very clear today that the overall target of reaching net zero by 2045 remains in place. And that's still 5 years earlier than the UK target. But nevertheless, it is a climb down, and it's one that's been branded a global embarrassment by environmental campaigners. Ahead of the announcement being confirmed, Friends of the Earth Scotland called it the worst environmental decision in the history of the Scottish Parliament. But what does it mean and where does it leave us? I'm Alistair Grant, the Scotsman's political editor, and I'm joined today, as always, by David Ball, the deputy political editor, political correspondent Rachel Amory, and Alexander Brown, the Scotsman's man in Westminster. And I apologise if my audio is not as crisp and clear as it normally is. I'm working from home due to a bug that I really don't want to pass on to my colleagues in our tiny Scottish Parliament office. But David, I know you've got a real interest in covering the climate crisis and the efforts of the Scottish and UK governments to reach net zero. Can you talk us through today's announcement and what it actually means?
Yeah, I mean, the Scottish government has got itself into a real muddle over its climate targets. I mean, these warnings have been coming for years and they've just kind of not done enough. And now they've got to the point where they've had to admit they have to scrap it. They were put into law in 2019, as you said, to reduce carbon emissions against 1990 levels by 75% by 2030 and become net zero by 2045. But they keep missing annual targets. And they were warned by the Climate Change Committee, which is the independent watchdog, back when they set these targets, the 75 one in particular, that it's going to be very difficult to meet it. And those warnings have kind of fallen on deaf ears. And it's just got to the point now where there just is no room to move. They can't do anything about it. And they've had to admit that it's going to be scrapped. And because of that, like you said, they've moved to these five-year carbon budget sort of methodologies, which is how the UK government kind of measures its sort of progress. It's not very much like the Scottish government to want to mirror a UK government scheme, but it kind of fits in with them being able to sort of scrap this target because the legislation doesn't allow them to particularly just change the number of that target. They can't just weaken it to 60 or 67, which is the UK government 2030 target. That's be sort of a good reason in the climate science for being able to do that. And the reason is they just haven't made enough progress. It's all down to sort of a lack of action.
And how did we get here? Because I was quite struck by comments by Chris Stark, the outgoing chief executive of the Climate Change Committee, who are effectively the kind of independent advisors, the government's independent advisors in these issues. And he was saying that the 2030 target was one that even they didn't know how to hit at the time it was made. So in other words, it was an overly ambitious target that MSPs had voted on. And it begs the question as to why they set up such a phenomenally difficult target that went way beyond what experts were asking for. Is it just a case of political messaging? And, you know, it sounds great to say you have world-leading targets, but implementing them is quite, you know, is another matter entirely.
Yeah, so it was actually down to the Greens, and I'm sure we'll come on to what that means for them today in a little bit. But they pushed when the climate targets were being set for it to be really ambitious, to be 75%, to really make a statement that Scotland was, we've heard these words said before, a world leader in climate targets. But there was a consensus of MSPs. They all signed up to this, but it was really the Greens that kind of pushed for it. Where we are is, as you mentioned, the CCC saying there just isn't a pathway to get to it. And this is not a new thing for them to say. I spoke to Chris Stark last month when they published their sort of START report that showed that this target was completely toast. But from the very beginning, they've said that you should be less ambitious, more realistic, and be able to actually hit these targets and find sort of a pathway towards that net zero.
Yeah. I think if I'm remembering correctly, and this might be wrong, I'm just doing this off memory, but the Greens wanted to go even further, didn't they? Did they not have like an 85% or something like that? And essentially there was this kind of political manoeuvring, and then the 75% figure was decided on by MSPs as a way forward. But Rachel, on the issue of the Greens, this is obviously embarrassing for them. There's no doubt about it. It's a tough issue for them. It's literally what their party stands for. It's the reason for existing. Where does it leave them, do you think? I mean, obviously, I don't think they've got any intention of leaving the cooperation agreement with the SNP or anything like that.
Yes, I think embarrassing is the word that kind of sums it up, isn't it? There's been a lot of criticism throughout the day of the Scottish Greens in all of this. For example, I think it was Scottish Labour leader Anna Sarwar earlier on today in the debating chamber in Holyrood basically said, what is the point of the Greens if it is not to, you know, have really ambitious climate targets that are being met? It's a difficult one for the Greens here. The Greens are polling very well with their voter base. They have done ever since the Bute House agreement with the SNP was signed. Is this the moment, though, where that falters? Because yes, the Greens have lots of other social policies such as housing and independence, but their big point is climate change. And they're now, as was pointed out in the chamber as well, the only Green government in the world to be, you know, voting against climate change targets here. Now, after FMQs each week, we get to have a sit down with some of the government advisors, and we were asking them, you know, how involved were the Greens in this decision? And they're basically saying they were consulted on this. They did agree to this. So this isn't something that will surprise the Greens. They knew this statement was coming. They knew the contents of this speech. They knew these targets were going to be scrapped. So it does leave them in a very, very difficult position. I mean, if I was advising the Greens, I'd be telling them to leave the Bute House agreement at this point, because this is, you know, this is their be all and end all, is climate change. And if they're not going to stand up for climate change here, then they're going to lose a lot of support. I think it was on the BBC earlier this morning, they were suggesting this could be their Lib Dem moment from the Lib Dem Conservative Coalition in 2010. So it really is quite serious for them, I think, at this point. They really need to think very, very carefully about how they play this now, because their voter base are voting for them because of climate change. Will they continue to vote for them if they're not going to stand up for the climate targets?
Yeah. And I suppose the Greens, if they were here, they might say something along the lines of, you know, it's the end result that matters. It's getting to that 2045 net zero ambition that matters. So all this kind of stuff is, you know, it's the route that we take, but it's that end result that matters. And I have to say, if I was advising them, you know, I can't really see why they would leave government, in the sense that they're a small party. They've got this chance to make decisions, to play a part in policy making. And I think if they left now, they kind of lose that. It's an opportunity they might not get back again anytime soon.
But at the same time as all of that, leaving the Bute House agreement would put a lot of pressure on the SNP. They would lose their pro-independence majority in Parliament, as they've kept on saying there. So if they really wanted to make a stand here, this is the time to do it, I think.
David, I think you caught up with Scottish Green co-leader Patrick Harvey earlier on today in the Scottish Parliament. Let's hear what he had to say.
Patrick Harvey, you went into government expecting to ramp up climate action. How embarrassed are you, and how can you go and look your members in the face and tell them that you're going to agree to roll back some of these legal targets that Scotland was so proud of?
Ramping up climate action is exactly why we went into government, and that's exactly what we're doing. We've had far too long in Scotland of too many politicians patting each other on the back about world-leading targets, but then voting against the actions. You know, for the 15 years that we've had climate targets in Scotland, I've been advocating some of the transformational changes that would have made 2030 possible if they'd been in place, and every other political party demanding more money for road building, demanding more aviation, opposing some of the changes that we need to decarbonise the way we heat our homes and buildings, the way we produce our food. Those policy changes that have been delayed far too long, that would have achieved more rapid progress, that would have made 2030 possible, I think we should all be angry that those changes were not made earlier. They are being made now. As a result of Greens in government for the last couple of years, we're cutting the cost of public transport with things like free bus travel for young people, taking away peak time rail fares. We're investing in things like the Heat and Buildings programme, which has been described as what could be a template for action in the rest of the UK. And today you heard from the Cabinet Secretary a new package of policy measures to accelerate emissions reductions. That's what we need to do. Accelerate the action while recognising that as a result of decades of inaction, that 2030 target cannot be met. The only rational response is to double down on the action that we're taking now, and that's what we're determined to do.
You've been in government for almost 3 years now. Should you have seen these warnings earlier? I mean, the CCC has warned about this 2030 target since it was set. So is now waiting for this actual ultimatum from the CCC left it too late to do anything about it?
Well, we haven't been waiting to do anything about it, obviously. As I've just said, Greens have been advocating transformational change across the whole board of policies that relate to climate for not just years, but for decades. With the Butte House Agreement 2.5 years ago, we accelerated the action on things like heat and buildings, on the record investment that we've seen this year in climate and nature, for example, in the Scottish budget. That's against an incredibly difficult backdrop of cuts from the UK government, and yet we still managed the biggest investment in climate and nature in the Scottish government's history just this year. What we need to do is accelerate that action, and that's what the package of policy announcements that the Cabinet Secretary made to, in our statement today, that's what that will achieve. And it's only by doing that that we'll make 2045 possible.
Are you confident of your SNP partners in government that they have the leadership required to get to 2045?
Yeah, I'm absolutely confident that a government with the will to implement some of the politically difficult policies that we've announced today can achieve that 2045 target. I'm also convinced that we're going to have opposition members, the same ones who are angry that Scotland's not going to meet 2030, the same ones will be up and down in the chamber for the next few months opposing the actions that we're taking that will accelerate emissions reductions. Things like demand management on our roads, things like the Heat and Buildings Bill, which we're already getting criticised from members who will prioritise a kind of cheap populist headline rather than the climate action that's necessary that will cut emissions, cut people's bills, and stimulate innovation and green jobs. So we need to double down on the action. That's the only rational response to the fact, and it is now an indisputable fact, that as a result of decades of action that's too slow, we're not going to meet that 2030 target. Climate policy is not produced with a magic wand. We cannot look at 2030 target and say, we're just going to meet it with some policies that can't exist. We can only achieve emissions reductions with policy, with action, and that's what we have to shift towards. Never mind self-congratulating speeches about climate targets while blocking climate action. We need to shift the emphasis to accelerating climate action, and I would challenge every other political party that spent far too long blocking green policies that will achieve emissions reductions. If you're serious, if you want to be taken seriously when you say you care about the climate emergency, start supporting us on the actions that are necessary to cut emissions.
Did your party think about walking away from the Butte House Agreement over the lack of climate action? Or is in your mind and in your party's mind, the only response to this is to have Greens in the room?
I mean, if what we were seeing was a lack of climate action, then yeah, we would not be part of that kind of government. What we are seeing is an acceleration of action, shifting the focus from targets onto action. Targets are really important. Targets are useful, but they're only useful if they focus the mind on taking action and accelerating action. And for far too long, for some politicians, targets have been seen as a substitute for action, something to be self-congratulatory about when we set the targets, and then they vote for road building, or then they vote for increased aviation, or then they vote against the kind of changes on land use that would far too often benefit the big landowners instead of seeing the changes that are necessary. What we need to see is climate action. This government is delivering accelerated climate action. I regret deeply that it's happened too late to make 2030 possible, but it is not too late to make 2045 possible if we commit now to make sure that the second half of this journey is one where we see climate action accelerated.
That's great, thanks very much. So obviously you've had some warnings that this 2030 target, you acknowledged it, has been coming for a while. You've known that this is quite a difficult target to achieve. Are you concerned you've left it until now until to kind of push that target or change the methodology about how you're doing it? Has your government kind of been slow to react to some of those warnings?
So what I would say is that I didn't want to be in the position that I'm in today. And having come into post, I took time and challenged my team to seek to find ways of retaining the legislative framework as it stood. That required me to take advice, to run models, to find out what I would actually have to propose to the people of Scotland in order to be able to make that 2030 target. And you know, some of them just were not feasible in line with the just transition. There were certain things that the model threw back, including having to take petrol and diesel cars off the road tomorrow. These are just not policies that I would ever consider implementing, but I had to go through that process. So no, I think now is the time. It comes just a number of weeks after the CCC finally confirmed that 2030, 75% was not doable. But of course you're right, that's a re-articulation of what they said in 2018 when the Parliament passed it on a cross-party basis.
There's stuff like the air departure duty, which is obviously there's a problem with the Highlands and Islands exemption. Is this a different commitment, or are you just kind of rehashing that commitment you've had to bring that forward, or can something actually change and it can it be brought forward?
Well, I hope that something can change. I hope that we can work out credible exemption for the Highlands and Islands, which makes sure that they are not adversely affected. And the commitment that I'm making today is to continue to call on the UK to work with us on that.
Can you get to 2045 with a Tory government in Westminster? And do you hope that a Labour government, even if that 28 billion doesn't materialise, that there will be enough capital spending that you can bring forward some of these big infrastructure projects that are going to be crucial?
So currently, we will not be able to achieve what we want to achieve with the approach that's been taken to climate with the incumbent UK government. And that has been made even worse recently by the up to 9% cut in our capital budget, together with their failure to do something akin to the Inflation Reduction Act. I have been really disappointed by Labour's approach to this. They have been called out by their own party and by Momentum for, you know, capitulating to the right wing, etc. The £28 billion commitment was a bit of a green shoot. That's been scrapped. So I'm pragmatic, I want to keep seeing progress. I will call on a new UK government, which I think is likely to be Labour, to change their position. But that's up to them to seek to deliver.
And you also heard from Mary McCallum, the Net Zero Secretary in the Scottish Parliament. Alex, what's your take on this from a UK perspective? You know, as someone who's covered the UK government's targets, which are to hit net zero by 2050, 5 years later than the Scottish government target. And how does it play into, you know, these kind of wider rows that we've seen within, for example, the UK Labour Party about green issues?
I think it massively guts the argument that the SNP have tried to make both about the UK government and about the Labour Party. For so long, every announcement or hint of softening a stance, either from the Prime Minister on their environmental targets or from the Labour leadership on seemingly most things, but especially the £28 billion investment, you know, for the green economy. We heard repeatedly from the SNP this was a betrayal. They were the only party brave enough to put forward policies that could address the dynamic and dangerous situation that we're in with the climate crisis. And now that kind of doesn't really land properly. They can't really make that argument anymore in the same way because they've done exactly the same thing. And you know, going back to the recommendations and the delayed publication of the report last year, it's kind of their own fault. They're trying to blame it on Westminster, and they're saying, you know, this is because economic mismanagement and we all need to pull together. But the UK government can go, well, hold on, this is, you know, you say that about everything. So I think it's easier for them. But for Labour, they now look like the greenest party in the room. They're the party that's going to have GB Energy. They're the party that wants to tax windfall giants. And in a position where the Labour Party, who so often have been criticised for not going far enough, can say, well, you've watered down your policies. We want to extend the windfall tax, which you oppose. We want to bring about an industrial, you know, green revolution. And you're going to tax nurses more while cutting tax for oil and gas giants. I think it's a gift to the Labour Party because it undermines criticism of them and makes them seem, you know, bolder for once, which is not something I think any of us maybe expected.
And I thought that there's interesting comments by Stuart MacDonald, the SNP MP on X, formerly known as Twitter, who said that this should be an opportunity to rethink the over-reliance, as he called it, on China in the renewable sector. Now, this is something that he has brought up before, isn't it?
Yeah, so he's often banging the drum about China. He is one of the hawks in Parliament, very critical of the Chinese government and their involvement. And whether it's writing for us in the paper or I've interviewed him, he spoke about his concerns about Scotland meeting its climate targets. I think we spoke about this maybe a month, 2 months ago. And he specifically raised the example of China and said, to meet our targets, which I'm not sure that we will, I don't think there's a plan. He said we would have to, you know, we're going to be relying on Chinese slave labor because the materials that make solar panels, I think to make them into the scale that would be required, they come from an area of China that relies on slave labor. And he had made that point months ago and said there was a lack of strategy. And I think it kind of fell on deaf ears. He's not on the front bench of the S&P Westminster team. Stephen Flynn couldn't find him a place, or perhaps Stuart didn't want to have one. And he now feels like he's very much been proved right. And I don't think his criticism is isolated. I think there is a frustration among SNP MPs, especially those outside the top team, that something so important to the Scottish government and just also important, you know, to the world, they've managed to mess up on their own.
And David, just on this issue, I mean, Mary McCallum, when she was giving her statement in Parliament, I think she set out a number of measures that the government's going to do now. And I was slightly amused to see that one of them was this idea about integrated ticketing across different forms of public transport, which I think we've been talking about now for, it seems like, you know, a decade at least. But there's lots of other things she said. Could you maybe touch on some of them?
Yeah, the ticketing is one we have heard repeatedly for years. I mean, it smells very much like the Greens have, like, insisted that is put at the front of this. They've been pushing for that for a while. I believe they're quite frustrated that it hasn't actually materialized. A lot of them are around transport, as you said, the ticketing there. There's a plan to ramp up EV electric vehicle charges in Scotland. There have been concerns that there aren't enough, and that is stopping people sort of buying them. They want to ramp up by 24,000 new EV charges. And some of these measures, they sound good, but they're not going to get instant sort of result. It's not going to completely overhaul the progress. They're just kind of incentives to help people move from petrol diesel cars to electric cars. There's a few things on sort of land use as well and aviation, but there's nothing really particularly groundbreaking. Obviously, the Scottish government doesn't have any extra money particularly to throw at this. They could prioritise to move money from somewhere else, but at the end of the day, they're just going to have to deal with what they put forward today. There's 18 or so measures in there. Nothing's going to really be groundbreaking at first glance, but they've chosen the sectors of the economy, sort of agriculture, land use and transport, where the sort of overall climate emissions are quite high at the moment, so they can hope to sort of bring those down, whereas we've seen a lot of progress on sectors like energy, but there's not very much they can really do in that sector to make any cuts.
Yeah, and I think some of this will probably involve some quite difficult decisions in the years ahead, particularly, you know, trying to reduce people's reliance on cars, for example. We've seen with the workplace parking levy, people might remember the rows about that. You've seen the almighty rows in local councils whenever they put in cycle lanes or traffic calming measures. It just always seems to become an extremely hot topic. Rachel, I wondered what you thought about whether voters will look at what's happened today and be influenced by it and how they vote. Because if you look at polling, you know, climate change is obviously a huge issue. Everyone accepts that it's something we need to do something about. But it's never top of people's issues and what they view as the most important, or what they view as, you know, the issues that they vote on. So do you think people will look at this and think it will put them off?
I think when it comes to the next election, which will be later this year, the general election, I probably won't. I don't think, because I think, as you said, the bigger issues are going to be things like the cost of living crisis and the economy. So I think that's going to be more what's going to happen at Westminster. When it comes to Holyrood, though, that's where the Greens are more likely to be winning seats. I don't think anybody's expecting the Greens to win very many seats, particularly in Scotland when it comes to Westminster. Whereas at Holyrood, that is where they're going to get seats. They have been very popular with the Green voter base, particularly with the Bute House Agreement. And so we will have to wait and see how they react to that. Will they forgive them for this action and still trust them to stand up on things such as trans rights and housing? So it's how much of a priority do the Green voters place on that compared to their other big policy points?
Alex, what do you think about that from a Westminster perspective in terms of how it might impact how people vote?
Well, I was going to ask, I mean, when HS2 was cancelled by Rishi Sunak, he announced what seemed to be less of a plan, more of a plan to have a plan, or things that had already been announced, but kind of big them up again, you know, like there'll be slightly better buses when they'd already announced buses many years prior. And I would be interested to know, I mean, David, you were just talking about them then. It seems to me like, would any of these policies been exciting and announced in addition to this, or are they only being announced and not necessarily new and life-changing because they're watering it down and it's trying to say, you know, we are doing this, but don't worry, we're doing this now, so things are slightly okay? Because obviously I'm coming at it from a Westminster perspective. I'm not as plugged into the Scottish government as you guys are, but this all sounds extremely Tory conference 2023 to me. It sounds like, you know, promise, here's a few toothpicks, I'm sorry I've cut the tree down. I'd be interested to know.
I'll let you answer that, David.
There is an argument to say that why are they just coming about now? And are they actually new? Because these are priorities that the Scottish Government and the Greens have talked about for a couple of years. One of them is a commitment to cut 20% of car journeys by 2030. That was made years ago, but there was no plan to back it up. And now they're finally saying, well, we're going to produce a plan. This is the problem, wasn't it? This is where it's all been an issue, is we've made all these plans, but we've not followed through on them. And it just seems that they've just thrown another bunch of plans at it and hoped that some of these will stick.
Yeah, I think when you look at things like, and just to go back to the ticketing issue, I think that is something that would make a real difference to people's lives. It would be a really good thing if it came into play. But it seems like we've been talking about it for so long, and there's just, you know, I understand why it might be complicated. You're dealing with lots of different transport sectors, potentially different operators. Completely get that it might be complicated, but it doesn't seem beyond the wit of man to do something about that. So it's kind of baffling that we're still having these conversations.
Well, yeah, and essentially these are measures that make it more attractive for people to use public transport. But if these don't work, people are going to have to get used to the fact that instead of the carrot, it's going to be a stick approach. We're going to get road user charging and basically motorists making it more expensive to drive and things like this. So if these things don't happen in the right time, they're just going to have to scale up the pace and how drastic they are. And a lot of these policies are already quite unpalatable with the public. If you look at some of the plans for sort of changing boilers in homes and things. So if we don't start making progress, these unpalatable policies are just going to get even more of a bad reputation, and that public buy-in just won't exist.
Well, on that note, I'm sure this is an issue we'll return to in the steamy. It's only going to get more heated, no pun intended, in the months and years to come. And at the end of the day, I suppose all our futures are at stake. So it's one of the most serious issues in politics at the moment, despite how, you know, hard it might seem to grapple with. But that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much for listening to The Steamy as Holyrood returned from its 2-week Easter break. We'll be back at the same time next week for more chat and analysis from the front lines of Scottish and UK politics. But until then, thank you very much. Just to note that we recorded this podcast on Thursday afternoon before the news broke that Nicola Sturgeon's husband, Peter Murrow, had been arrested and later charged by the police as part of a long-running investigation into the SNP's funding and finances. For full coverage of this, please buy a copy of The Scotsman or visit The Scotsman's website and social media channels.